Lennox Lewis. Lennox, I'm coming for you.
Is it frustrating to train like you did and then have this in 7 or 8 seconds?
For this fight. I only trained probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks for this fight. I had to bury my best friend, and I dedicated this fight. I wasn't going to fight. I dedicated this fight to him. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynch is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Saying now, Mike.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Ringside Frackers. My name is Lewis. Welcome to the second ever episode. I'm joined by our usual cast of Seb, Samson, Jide, and Leroy. How you doing, chaps?
Good, what's good?
Good, bad, man. Sweet.
And we also have an extremely special guest with us today. We've got Ahara Davis. How you doing, man? Straight out of Dubai.
Listen, man, I'm still in Dubai.
Listen, you're enjoying life, man. I've been looking at your Instagram and I've been jealous because I'm supposed to be out there with you lot.
Yeah. Now, you know what? I'm actually going to come back a bit earlier because what I've seen is that this lifestyle, like, I can't handle it. Like, even though, like, the sun's out and the weather's good, it's a bit too many distractions here. And I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to come out here. I'm going to train every day. I'm going to run on the beach. But I literally haven't ran once. And every day, every night, I'm out and about. I'm getting in at 4, 5 a.m. And, like, no, I can't handle it. So
what was your initial purpose for going out to Dubai anyway? Just for a break? Or was it, like, to train?
I wanted to look at property out here.
Okay.
I wanted to look at property out here. And also, I needed a little break as well. Come on, I'm the Golden Contract champion. I won a big fight and I haven't traveled since. So I said, you know what? I deserve a little break, but also it was a bit of business too. So I've done all my property viewings and had a little break. But to be honest, I thought I needed about 2 weeks here. But to be honest, all I really needed was about 4 days, three or 4 days. Because this hectic lifestyle.
Dubai is very hectic, isn't it? So much to do, too much distractions.
Too many babes, man.
Too many tricks. You're saying you're looking at a property out there, but would you stay there? Or because if you're talking about the distractions.
That's another thing. Like initially, when I came out here, I said, you know what? I wanted to look at investment purposes. But when I come out here and I see how they live, how safe it is out here, like it's a lot safer here than it is back home. Like back in England, if you go home and you leave your car key in your car's gone. In a couple of hours, the car will be gone. But here, it's literally so safe. People leave their house and they leave their doors open. People leave their cars and they leave their key in the car, ignition on. People leave their purses and their wallets out and about on the tables. Nothing gets robbed here. No one's house gets robbed. Like, it's so safe. And that safety is what I love. Like, back home, you see people getting stabbed, people getting shot, people getting killed, murder. In Dubai, there ain't any of that stuff. So...
That's because death penalty if you steal a pack of chewing gum out there, man.
But if you play games, bro, that lashes. Exactly.
I was going to say, I've heard the prisons there are not saying that anyone wants to enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. So because of that alone, because of the safety alone, I'm like, I could see myself living here. So I want to stay here a couple of months every year. So I want to get my first property out here. And I'm staying there.
Would it be a place, though, that you think you would, like, you talk about staying there for a few months a year. Would that be pre-fight or post-fight?
A bit of both. For pre-fight, I can do some runs in the sun. I can train in the sun, train in the heat. Help me keep the weight down. And then when camp gets really close, then I'll go back to England and I'll train out there. But I think a bit of pre and post.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with because you mentioned your Golden Contract win, and that was, like, you know, that was a fight that everyone was looking forward to. Everyone, I think it was quite a close fight on the night. What did you think of your performance overall? And like, how did it feel to actually, you know, get that Golden Contract win? Because that was a massive milestone for you.
I don't think it was a close fight. Everyone seems to think it was a close fight. Like, the first judge has it down as a draw. Like, me being in there, I thought I was winning almost every round. I would give him 2 rounds, 3 at most. But it was a 10-round fight. He probably won 3. I won at least seven of them. I fought the whole fight in gear one. I could have taken up another two or three gears. That's why the fight, it was a really boring fight. And everyone expected me to go in there and to knock him out. But I just said, you know what? Let me just win the fight. Make it a boring fight, but just win the fight. Hit and don't get hit. And that's what I've done. Look at his face after the fight. Look at my face after the fight. And like, he got hit with more shots. He was getting hit with a lot more shots than what I was getting hit with. So how everyone had it a close fight to this day, I don't know, because I've watched the fight back and I'm still a bit confused.
You know what? I actually had you winning the fight quite comfortably. I thought you controlled it. It was a low output fight, but you did pretty much control it with your range. Really, it was quite comfortable. You didn't really seem to take too many risks against you. It seems like you was fighting within yourself a bit, but I thought you had the win quite comfortable.
I think it's probably the reputation, isn't it? It's like, because of your reputation, when you don't go out there and display somebody or knock somebody out in their heads, in somebody's head afterwards, they think, oh, yeah, it's probably a close fight. So I think that's probably why many people think it was a close fight when it probably wasn't.
Yeah, and the commentary, listen, like, there was bias. You can tell from the first round, they wanted him to win. Obviously, the odds were massively in his favor, so they probably put down a bit of money and thinking that their commentary is gonna have an effect and get him to win. But I got to win.
Is that another? What, wait, was the fight on Sky? Was it?
Yeah, it was on Sky Sports. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, I guess we'll get onto Sky and Matchroom at some point of the podcast. But let's talk on to let's continue with the fight. So obviously you got the victory and What's next for you actually with this the golden contract stuff? Is because I haven't actually seen any fights announced. I know this Corona thing has just completely fucked things up. So like, how much has it actually affected things?
Oh, it hasn't affected me at all. Like last year was meant to be everyone's worst year in boxing, but it was my best year by far. So COVID-19 hasn't affected me, and it's not going to affect me this year or next year. So, you know, I've got the deal. I'm just waiting to speak to MTK and to meet them. Right now, I haven't heard from them, and I'm still enjoying my time off. I'm still enjoying my break. Like, this year, I'll fight once. I can fight once this year, and I'll be happy with that. Mm. If I fight twice, I fight twice. But this year, I fight, even if I fight only once, I'm good. I'm good. So I'm just waiting to see what MTK come back to me with. But I've got a big deal now.
Yeah,
I'm under contract, so I've got a big deal.
Is there anyone that you're looking at that you'd want to fight?
Right now, I'm not looking at anyone. To be honest, I'm just chasing a check. That's what they call it. I'm just only chasing a check. I don't hate any boxer. I never hate anyone. I never dislike anyone. It's just, to me, it's just business. If it makes money, it makes sense. I just want to fight the person that I'll get paid the most to fight. So
where's the bag at for you?
With everyone. I can fight anyone else because I'm on a deal now. So regardless who I fight, whatever, I'm getting a certain amount of money. So you give me a journeyman, I'm easy.
I saw a comment from Anthony Fowler recently. I wanted to know if you caught onto that.
Yeah, he said that he'll snap me in half. But the reality with that, yeah, is that after me and him had our back and forth, Eddie Hearn wanted to make a new press conference. So I was like, cool, let's do it. Let's make the fight happen. And then after that conference was done, I haven't heard back from Eddie Hearn or from Anthony Fowler to this day. I haven't heard back from any of them. And I'm like, if you want to make this fight happen, don't be online talking shit like, oh, let's make the fight happen. I'll snap him off. Offer me the fight. I told him I will go up £10. He comes down £4 because there's a £14 weight gap.
Yeah, I wonder about the weight difference.
Yeah, I told him I would go up £10 if you come down £4, let's make the fight happen. And I haven't heard back from them. So those guys will talk.
So do they want you to go all the way up then?
No, they just don't want the fight.
Mm.
But what do you think about? Yeah,
they want to come online. Like, they want to come online and act like they do want the fight and blah blah blah. Come on, man, these guys don't want the fight.
But what do you think about a middleweight calling out someone who's a 140 pounder?
Don't know, man. Scott Fitzgerald gave it to him, and so the next person that's got any credibility that he wants to fight would have to be someone three weight classes below him, because that's the only way that he's going to stand a chance. Because against every other contender that's in his weight class, will get dealt with just like Scott Fitzgerald done to him. So he wants to pick on a few little guys. That's actually what it is. Apart from Fitzgerald, he ain't fought anyone good. He's fought a bunch of journeymen, and the first decent person he fought, he got his ass whooped. So, you know, I know what he's doing. He wants to pick on fucking lightweights. It's like me trying to call out fucking paperweight, strawweight guy, one of those guys. He's trying to be a bully.
But it is a fight that you would be open to doing. Like, so you've gone back to them, you said, yeah, fuck it, let's do this fight. Oh, yeah. And
in Liverpool for me,
you love Liverpool, innit?
Listen, when it's me against them, it's actually 3-0 to me. Chris Freeman was the first one that I fought from Liverpool. I knocked him out. I stopped him, I think it was 4 rounds, and then Derry Matthews, he's from Liverpool. I knocked him out in round 4, and then Tom Farrell comes. Tom Farrell was like, I'm going to avenge Liverpool City, I'm going to avenge them. And it didn't work for him. So, you know,
looking to make it 4-0.
Yeah, I guess I can make it 4-0. So if Andy Fowler wants to give it a shot, then I'm all open. I'm happy to make it 4-0.
Is this why Bellew hates you, yeah?
Listen, man, the thing about Tony Bellew, I don't understand it, because when I got thrown under the bus, you know what happened with the Hillsborough situation. I had never heard of Hillsborough in my entire life, but Tony Bellew came online, made it seem as if I'm disrespecting the families of the 96 that died. I had never heard of Hillsborough, but Tony Bellew, he was the main one coming online, trying to get me thrown under the bus. And I think it was because him and that Dave Matthews are like best friends. And when I knocked out Dave Matthews on the show that he headlines, he must have felt some way. So I don't blame him. If I was him, I'd probably be mad too.
Was that the main catalyst for what went down with Matchroom then in the end?
No, there was actually more that happened. But so what happened after Eddie threw me under the bus? Yeah. So Eddie took me off. No, what happened? Eddie phoned me. Eddie, my management, my coaches, they phoned me. They're like, listen, we actually believe you. We know that you've never heard of Hillsborough, but I've got so much friends up in Liverpool. So I have to make it seem as if you're being punished. That's the only way that I'm going to keep my friends up north, because my friends up north, they buy tickets to the show, they sell out, and I make so much money because of them. So I have to make it seem as if you're being punished and you're being disciplined. So I'm going to take you off this show, but you're going to be on the next show in February. And then I was like, okay, cool. So you actually believe that I'm innocent, yet you're still going to try to punish me. Eddie was like, listen, man, it's business, isn't it? If it makes money, it makes sense. So I was like, I found that a bit weird, and my management believed me, but yet they made it seem as if I'm banned from the gym. And they was phoning me like, listen, you're not really banned, we believe you, but then they'll come online, oh, these banned from the gym. I was like, no, fuck these motherfuckers. So obviously, I had a meeting with a few other people. Me and Frank Warren met up. The day Eddie found out that I met up with Frank Warren, Eddie Hearn sent me a text. Eddie Hearn said to me, how's things? If you're free, come and see me. I'm at the Matchroom office. But you know Eddie Hearn's got a way when he gets you and he sits you down, he's got a way of like getting you over. But I was like, nah, I'm actually mad. I'm actually angry. I'm not coming to see you. But I was like, I'm not in town right now. But if you want, you can phone me. So Eddie Hearn phoned me and he was like, listen, man, I've heard you meet up with Frank Warren. And if you want to go to Frank, that's fine. But I just feel like you started off at Matchroom and with Sky and blah, blah, blah. And we've built you to the person that you are now. And it will be a tragedy to see you go. So I know that Frank offered you a deal. What I'm offering you is a free fight deal. Your first fight would be on the Hey Bellew 2 card when he fought Tony Bellew for the second time. Your second fight would be on a Dillian White when he fights Joseph Parker. And then your third fight will be at the end of the year, which we'll figure it out. He offered me the fight purses. I was like, cool, let me have a think. As soon as that phone call was done, Eddie Hearn sent me a text offering me the fight purses in text. It was a bit less than what Frank offered, but it was basically the same amount of money. I sat down, spoke to my brother. I was like, nah, Eddie Hearn threw me under the bus, even though he knew I was innocent. Fuck this motherfucker. I'm going to Frank Warren. So I decided to join Frank, and then we announced it. When it got announced, the next day, Eddie Hearn come on Fight Hype, and he was like, you know what? We have to let O'Hara go because his personality wasn't fitting the image. I felt like we had to drop him. We had to let him go. And I was just sat there and I was thinking, mate, I've got textures on my phone of the fight deal that you offered me only yesterday. I was going to come online and expose him. I was that close to I like to going online and exposing him, but I don't like to expose texts and stuff. I feel like it's a bit too personal. Mm. So I just thought, you know what, let me just leave him.
Damn.
Yeah, that's what happened. What promoter is gonna drop me? Like, promoters don't drop me. Promoters don't drop me. I dropped them. I dropped Eddie Hearn, and Eddie Hearn made it seem as if he dropped me. Come on, man. Eddie Hearn ain't gonna drop me.
Eddie Hearn's a professional spin doctor, man.
Yeah, that's it.
I've been saying that for years.
Samson, none of it from you, mate. Yeah, none of it from you.
I'm overdosing right now.
Samson's not a big fan of Eddie Hearn either, O'Hara.
The thing about Eddie Hearn's all about the check. If it makes money, it makes sense. And the thing about me, I put bums on seats. Even after I fought Taylor, Eddie Hearn still knew this guy puts bums on seats, even though he lost. What did he do? As soon as I thought Taylor, I got beat, everyone thought I was done. Eddie Hearn got me in the show straight away. Chief support against Tom Farrell up in Liverpool. So I still sold, and I would always sell. And I would always sell. So boxing promoters, they will always want me. Always want me.
How did you find, so pre-throwing you under the bus, sorry, that's a bit of a tongue twister. How did you find that Matchroom actually managed your career, like compared to how you like being managed at MTK and stuff?
Well, MTK, their managers, Matchroom, they're like promoters, so they've got different roles. Mm-hmm. But I was managed by Charlie Sims, who's a good friend of Eddie Hearn, so it's basically is Eddie Hearn. So, but they managed me quite good. They got me the right fights at the right time. They got me the right fights at the right time. I got paid. So I can't complain with how I got treated. The only issue I had with them was when I got thrown under the bus. With MTK, MTK care about me. They do the best for me, the same as what Matchroom did until they threw me under the bus. So, but with MTK, things are all good. Sometimes when I say things, that's a bit out of line. MTK, they might like, listen, man, calm down, chill, relax, just be you. Don't say anything too over the edge. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll calm down a bit.
I've got a question, actually. I heard rumours that apparently Matchroom kind of had you going out there being a bit brash or being a bit loud just to kind of build your profile up. So it wasn't necessarily you. Is that true?
When I had certain conferences, they would say to me, you know what, we got to sell this fight, so be entertaining. They won't tell me what to say, but they'll be like, yeah, be entertaining. Anything like talk some shit, shout, make some noise, make the crowd rumble a bit. So the way I acted in the conference, it wasn't really me. It was how I got told to be. And I thought, you know what, let me just impress these guys because you know that's how they want me to be. So a lot of how I acted in the conferences wasn't really me, which is why since I've left Matchroom, you haven't seen me do that shit in a conference since, because yes. Frank Warren told me just be you, MTK told me just be you, and I perform better when I just be me.
Yeah, it's noticeable. I can see, like, yeah. You've got a bit more of a public, like, perception where it's a bit more positive, where people seem to side with you a lot more now as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you feel that at the time? That, like, did you feel like a bit like a villain at the time? And because obviously, knowing you, you're obviously a nice guy. You're like solid as gold. Do you know what I mean? So to see you depicted as a villain, kind of, you know, on a personal level, it didn't feel right. So how did that like affect you going into fights where, you know, did you enjoy being the villain?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I won't lie. I loved it. I loved getting booed. I absolutely love getting booed into every fight. I love getting booed at the conferences, getting shit thrown at me, getting called a cunt over Instagram. Getting 1,000 DMs, you were a fucking arsehole. I loved every second of it. Even though it was, I loved it. I won't lie. Some people can't handle the backlash, but mate, it's the best thing for me.
Yeah, and obviously you got the victories in those fights as well, so an extra win to go on top.
Yeah.
Do any of you guys have any more questions on MTK or Matchroom or anything like that before we move on to next?
Nah, go on.
No, so just a couple questions on like Angel Fernandez. What's exactly has gone on there, and what's the latest in that regard?
No, me and Angel, we just had one fight. He was my coach when I fought Jeffrey Ofori, which was my second fight in a golden contract, and then after that, we both decided that, you know, he's gonna stay up in Loughborough and train the other guys, and I'm gonna stay at Will Jones's gym because that's where we was at anyway. We was at the Edge gym training with Will Jones. So when he started, when he got the deal with Loughborough, he was like, okay, cool. Feel like we both knew it was the best thing. Like we both knew it was the best thing. He's gonna go to Loughborough. I felt comfortable staying at Will's gym. So then we got Kevin Mitchell on board. But me and Angel, we've always been friends. Like we'll still talk. If I see him, it's like cool. There's no awkwardness between us. Or I feel like we both knew that, you know what, this is the best move for us both. So that's what it was really. I was just with him for that one fight.
Cool. Well, two questions on that. One, Will Jones, how do you find him? Because I've been watching him. I've seen him train probably a few years now. So how do you kind of find that, and what do you think he's adding to your game currently?
It's not only Will Jones. He's got Kevin Mitchell on board too. So it's Kevin and it's Will Jones. Will Jones hasn't got the experience that Kevin Mitchell's got. That's why it's good that we've got Kevin also on board, because he's got all of the experience and he's been there, done it, he's fought. So he's got more experience than what Will Jones has got. But I train with them both because Will Jones he's also got his good points. Mm. He's a bit inexperienced, but he's also great at analysing opponents. He brings the best out of me because he knows what shots I throw best. And then he makes me throw that shot again and again and again and again. And then when I throw it in the bar, it's like, wow, I've been so good at that shot, but now I can throw it 10 times better than I did in the past.
Mm.
And Kevin Mitchell's more about your head movement, how to preserve your energy, being smart in the ring, being sharp in the ring. So they've all got they both got their good points. That's why having them both as one on a team, it just brings the best out of me.
They complement each other.
Yeah.
Interesting. Cool. And then, sorry, the second part on that is Angel Fernandez. What do you think he kind of adds to, because I know he's working with Joshua, what do you think he adds to that camp? And did you see that in Joshua's last fight? Did you see, okay, this is probably what Angel worked on or whatever?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't analyse what exactly AJ done and he's been doing with Angel, but all I've known is that from the loss AJ took, he's improved massively since he's brought Angel on board. Since he's been brought on board, I'm not sure what he's added or what's changed, but I know.
What happened there?
You're gone.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. Yeah, I was just saying that I'm not sure what Angel bring on board, but whatever he has brought on board, AJ's improved massively as a fighter. So him bringing Angel on board is saying something.
What? Just going back to Seb's first question. What was the idea about bringing him in for one fight? Would you have preferred to keep him on for longer, or was that just like we need him for that specific fight? Or how does it actually work with those kind of things?
Me and my coach before Angel, Tony Cisa, he was my coach before Angel. We had a few disagreements in the gym, so me and Tony parted ways, and I was fighting in about 6 weeks. So, and I didn't have a coach. Me and Tony wasn't getting along. So it was like, I spoke to MCK and it was like, okay, cool. Who can you get me? They gave me a list. They asked a few coaches and then me and Angel agreed. And then, so when Angel got on board, I had 6 weeks left for the fight. But then I think after the fight was done, honestly, I feel like the way Angel's a great coach. He's got amazing skill, but the kind of coaching style I found it hard to adapt to. But then when I got in the fight, I wasn't doing what Angel taught me in the gym. And I wasn't. I've watched the fight back being in there. I'm like, Angel taught me this, that. But I naturally go back to what I've learned all the years before Angel. I don't think that kind of style was really for me. I wish I could fight that way. But me being in boxing all these years, I couldn't do it. And I feel like Angel also knew that I wasn't fighting the way that I fight in the gym, or I wasn't doing what I got told to or what I've been doing in the gym. So I feel like we just both knew that that kind of style that Angel has isn't me. And I would probably be a lot better as a fighter if it was me and if I had it in me, but I think it wasn't in me. But Angel's a great coach. You look at fighters that he's got, you look at Sultan Zurabek, amazing fighter that's been with Angel from a kid. And you can see what Angel can do to someone. What Angel can make you, but I feel like with me, I just didn't have it. I couldn't do it.
You mentioned Tony Cisse there, and you said you had a few disagreements in the gym. I think that's kind of putting it nicely. I did hear an interview with you guys. How are you guys now? How's the relationship? Have you, like, is that cool?
I've seen him once since then. I've seen him once after I won the golden contract. I went to go watch Anthony Yard train, and then Tony was there. So when I saw him, it was awkward. I was thinking, shit, I ain't talked to this guy. But then after Andy Spar, Tony came up to me. He was like, you know what? It was a great last fight you had. Congratulations on your win on the golden contract. It was a good fight. And I was like, thank you. And then since then, even though that was it, it's now like now is a positive vibe now. With us, if I see him, like, we'll say cool. Like, if I still speak to him through my other friends that see him, I'm like, cool. Tell him that I said hi when you see him and stuff like that. So yeah, that's how it is right now.
Samson, did you have a question?
No, I was gonna kind of branch off. Okay. So there you go. Yeah,
cool. So if has anyone else got any other questions before we move on to the Campbell Garcia segment then?
Yeah, actually, let me touch on since we spoke on Yard just briefly, what do you think about the situation with his old trainer? I know Tunde was your trainer at one point as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hello?
Hello? Yep. So I was just saying, do you think in terms of him with Yard staying with Tunde, do you reckon that's a good move or do you think he needs to move on?
I think staying with Tunde would be a good move for him. Like, me and Anthony speak often, and since Anthony fought, like, we spoke once about the fight briefly for like a minute. I just wrote one thing and then that's it. He asked me one thing, I answered it. That's it. I haven't spoken to him about what he's going to do next, about boxing. Like, when I see him, it's just, we don't talk about boxing that much. But I heard the interview that he done the other day, and I'm not going to advise him on what to do.
Yeah.
But I feel like getting rid of Tunde would be a mistake.
Okay.
I feel like he doesn't need to get rid of him. He probably needs to bring someone else on board to add extra input.
Mm. Why do you think it would be a mistake to get rid of Tunde?
The pads, not only the pads, the way that Tunde trains him is what makes him so sharp. If you, as you've seen him, Andy Sharp, and the kind of style he's got, he hits and he doesn't get hit. He hits and he doesn't get hit. And he's got amazing talent, even before Tunde. Andy could always box. But when him and Tunde started to work together, he could box, but he also had a sharpness and a slickness about him where he hits and he doesn't get hit. And that's what Tunde does, and that's what Tunde put in him. And I feel like if he leaves him, he could possibly lose that. So keeping Tunde on board will be a great move, but maybe bringing another guy or another coach on board that can give extra input will be the best move.
Would you have any recommendations if Anthony came up to you and said, like, okay, who do you think would be a key addition?
100%, Tony Cisse. Tony Cisse will be the great guy. He'll be the perfect guy for Anthony Yard to bring on board. Like, mm-hmm. Tony Cisse had us from meeting with amateurs. Before Tunde was my coach, or Anthony's coach. Tony Cisse was my coach, and he was Anthony Yard's coach as an amateur. And he made Anthony and me beasts. In the amateurs, I was knocking out everyone. Back in the amateurs, Anthony Yard was knocking out everyone. Looking at everyone, like Tony, like now Andy's more smart, sharp, a thinker, hit and don't be hit. But back then he was a fucking beast, mate. He will fucking kill you and eat you for lunch. I remember when he fought this guy, like he had about 6 fights as an amateur. He had under 10 fights, so you fight in the under 10 category. And they made him fight in the over 20 category. And he was fighting this guy from Islington, and his name was Jermaine something. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was like, you've had less than 10 fights. Why are you fighting a guy that's had over 20 to...
Was that in the box cup at...
No, it wasn't. It wasn't in the box cup. It was somewhere else. And I remember thinking, like, shit, this is like, Anthony could lose. Listen, the way Anthony destroyed this guy, like, he finished him. He didn't win. He finished him. Like, fatality kind of shit. Like, he finished the guy, like, blood everywhere. And he weren't stopping. He was gone for him, throwing shot. I was thinking, shit, like, this guy's a fucking beast, man.
So
when you look at Andy Yard now, you don't see that killer. Now what you see a tactical technician. He's gone from a killer to a tactical technician. And I feel like at times it's about being able to switch between the killer and the technician, the killer and the technician. And Tony Cisse will bring that side back out of him. But Tunde brings that technician side out of him. But he needs that killer like he was in the amateurs. And I feel like Tony Cisse is the right guy to bring that on board. Everyone's been saying Adam Booth, David fucking Caldwell, Ben Davidson. Nah, Tony Cisse is the man for it.
What, how do you, so have you got any experience of like working alongside two trainers, and how do you think that works out, having maybe two big personalities, because Tunde is a big personality and Tony is a big personality as well. How do you think that works out, like, you know, in practicality?
I don't think they'll get along.
Do they need to though? But this is the thing, do they need to get along?
They do, because I'll be honest on this podcast. I'm friends with them both. I know them both, as they're both in the same gym together. But, mate, having them both train out of the yard is going to be hard to work, because Tunde is hard-headed. Tunde knows what his way is, and his way is. Also, Tony's even more hard-headed than what Tunde is. Tunde's he's a bit hard-headed, but Tony's worse. Tony's like, nah, this is how it is. And the thing about Tunde would think, he would just, you know, sometimes he would think this is wrong, but he won't say it. But the thing about Tony will say it, and he was listening. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. Like, this is this way, and Tony's way and Tunde's way are like different. So they can't be in the gym at the same time. You need to have one day under Tunde, the other day Tony. One day Tunde, the other day Tony. Don't let them hear what each other's saying.
How does that work out then? For like Yod. How does he get the best out of both worlds and, you know, merge it into a fighting style that helps him be productive and win his fights?
Because you listen to both. One round or for a few minutes in a round, you do what Tunde style. And when you need to switch up, then you've got Tony style. Because both of their styles are both right. Both of their styles are both right, but they can be switched between. You're a beast and then you're a technician, then a beast and then a technician. You can switch in the ring while you're fighting.
So do you think that, so the fight against Lyndon Arthur that Anthony had, do you think he would have benefited more from having Tony's
100%. Like, that fight could have gone either way. I watched the fight. The fight could have gone either way. I feel like Anthony should have got that win as the A-side fighter anyway. As the A-side fighter in a close fight, the A-side fighter should get the win. Anthony should have got the win as the A-side fighter, even though it was a close fight. It could have gone either way. Anthony should have got the win. But having Tony there, Tony would have... I feel like Tunde's content with win the fight. Be smart, hit and don't be hit. Tunde's content with that. But the thing about Tony's not content with that shit. Tony's like, listen, it don't matter if you've won every round and you've won the round and you're winning the fight convincingly. In the last round, get him the fuck out of here. That's what Tony's mindset is. And if Tony was there... Tony would have said from round 9, yes, even though you think you've won every round and you probably have won every round, get the guy the fuck out of here. The guy's weak. The guy can't hurt you. He can't trouble you. Get him the fuck out of here.
Well, like that's what Yard needed.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. On this shit, man. I respect that. just moving on to... did you catch the Campbell-Garcia fight?
Yeah,
what was your thoughts on I want to ask you beforehand, because about this topic, because we did our first episode, we actually previewed the fight, and you know, a lot of us weren't really rating Garcia, like, you know, certain man on this call were calling him an Instagram boxer, like a bit of a YouTube boxer, but what was your thoughts on Garcia heading into the fight? Like, had you seen much of him, and how did you rate him?
To be honest, before the fight, I didn't know much about Garcia. I didn't think he's an Instagram boxer. But I'm like, mate, this guy's too inexperienced for Luke Campbell. Like, Garcia's physically not a big guy. He physically doesn't look strong. I've seen a few of his fights, but he hasn't fought anyone on Campbell's level. He hasn't. And I was like, Campbell's fought at an even higher level. He's fought at world level. He's fought amazing fighters. Lomachenko, all these other big names. And I was like, Campbell could win the fight. He could win the fight. The only way Garcia's going to win this fight is if he's something special. Because he's not meant to win this fight. Instagram followers don't win you fights. Hype around your name don't win you fights. And you talking don't win you fights. The only way Garcia's going to win this fight is if he's a fucking special fighter. And, mate, he proves himself to be something special indeed.
So he proved to be special one, and that was it. Something that you that was a surprise to you though. Like, did you the way he fought, like the power that he possesses, his speed, like was that surprising to you?
100%. I didn't think he had any of that shit in him.
I don't think any of us did as well. Like, but when let's talk a little bit about the fight then, guys. I'll bring everyone else in as well. Obviously, not, I think I'm the only one who got the prediction right out of all of us that I said Garcia might. I had a feeling Garcia might stop him simply because I didn't really understand why the bookie odds were so in favor of Garcia. And I just felt like there's something not quite. I think there was something we were missing in our analysis. Maybe sometimes we overrate British talent going over to America and stuff like that. So yeah. I kind of felt like Garcia probably would stop him. But some of his biggest detractors here, Samson, today, Leroy, Seb.
I said he was going to win by UD.
Did you, right? I won't include you then.
I lie, man. You said he was going to win by a robbery, bro. Don't try and... You said it was a golden boy card, big man.
You did put a little caveat in there, so he kind of got himself a get out of course.
Hey, was it that lie though? I did say you. Listen, my bet. I put Garcia by UD. Then I tried.
But you didn't think it was really gonna happen. You were just covering your ass.
Yeah, I think it was a safe one. I'm gonna put my hands up now and say I was wrong. I completely got it wrong. I underrated Garcia. Garcia clearly has a bit more to his arsenal than I gave him credit for. But in the same breath, I still don't believe he's gonna rise to the top of the, you know, or the table against the other names that he's affiliated with. I think he falls behind them. But in saying that, Campbell was a really good win, and especially about the way he went about it, especially with overcoming the adversity he faced in the second round. I was really shocked that he came back after that heavy knockdown and came back and got victory in the manner he did. And seriously, that left of the body that he threw was straight out of Canelo's book. It was literally textbook Canelo move. So well done to the trainers on that.
The thing is, with Garcia, like, while we might not rate him technically as high as the rest of the other guys, as a Teofimo, as a Haney or whatever, he's got ridiculous power and speed. Like, you have to acknowledge the guy can punch, and the guy can he can time his punches, and he's quick. So while that will always be an equalizer, especially in a weight class. If he's fighting someone like Tank, for example, Tank is a small guy. You don't realize this guy's like 5'4". Like, Garcia, what was that?
Taller than that, man. Come on,
mate. He's like 5'4".
He might be 5'5". I'm not gonna lie.
He's that 5'4", 5'5".
Google won't lie to us. I'll check.
And he's got really small arms. Like, if he's fighting against a guy like Garcia, while he might be technically better than him,
he's 5'5" Sorry,
Garcia can time his punches. He throws his quick and he hits hard. He hits, in my opinion, just as hard as Tank. Because
Tank is a pound for pound puncher.
I have not seen Tank hurt anyone at 135. He fought Gamboa at 135 with one leg and couldn't hurt him. He had to stop him on his feet in the 12th round. Like, come on, let's be serious.
Can you go watch that fight again, please?
That's just facts. That's just facts. He should have the Tank that stops people is a 126 and 130. These are just facts. I'm not even lying.
I feel like we should make Ahara a mediator in this debate. Ahara, who possesses the most power out of Garcia and Tank?
I don't know. I don't know. Garcia's more skillful than Tank. 100% he's more skillful than Tank. He's more slick than Tank. But dunno. Tank can hit. Tank can probably hit a bit harder, but Garcia, he can still hit. Garcia's got that one punch that dazes you, and then the second punch is gonna come that's just gonna knock you out. But Tank's got the one punch knockout. But they both hit hard. Yeah.
Who would you see like coming up on top in that in that matchup? Is that like a 50-50 fight, do you think?
That's a total 50-50 fight. total 50-50 fight.
Nero, you disagree?
I got to hold my hands up. I underrated Garcia as well. And he's definitely showed a lot more to him. And I'm actually thinking now, because he's so young, he's with a good trainer, and that he's got a lot of raw attributes which he can improve on. So I think he's going to get better and better as he gets older. But maybe it's me and being biased. I think Javonta's amazing. I think he's a superb fighter, and I still don't see him. I still don't see Garcia on that level, and I still think it's heavily weighted in Tank's favor, even if he's moving up in weight.
Hmm. What? How about everyone else? How does everyone else see that fight going?
I think it's a close fight. I was with Leroy and Samson, and I thought there's nothing like Tank's going to take his head off. But the more I'm thinking about it, and when the fight was most probably going to happen, and as you said, like with his trainer, and if he has the raw attributes, and we underrate size a lot as well, and because again he's young, he's quick, like I don't know if he can do it again because at this point I don't rate his boxing ability that highly, but I still feel like he's got the physical attributes to be able to execute a game plan where he can keep Tank at range. Like we saw Leo Santa Cruz box Tank. He was outboxing him until Tank landed the dynamite. These are facts. He was outboxing him. If you watch the fight,
I saw Tank disrespect.
Nah, he wasn't. He didn't
respect care his for power. His ability.
He didn't respect his power, but he was getting outboxed. That's just what it is. Like if that was a boxing and you get him scored by how much punches you're landing versus how much your friend and what's landing against you, he was outboxing him. He was outboxing.
He was landing the more punches, but he wasn't landing the telling shots. The telling shots
wasn't hurting him.
And was getting walked down.
He's a little guy. He's not going to hurt him. That's what it is. But he was outboxing him. And like, if Leo Santa Cruz, who's not known for that at all, can do that to Tank, I'm sorry. I believe someone like Garcia can do that. And he's got power. And he's got speed. So that's why I've changed. It's a closer fight than I thought before, personally.
Ahara, what did you think of Campbell's performance going into the fight? Do you think he was a little bit surprised by Garcia?
100%. Everyone was like, when I saw Garcia's puncher power, I was like, yeah, like your puncher power can work against bums. Anyone can go in there and beat up a bunch of bums. But you beat up an Olympic gold, a guy that's won Olympic gold like Campbell, it showed something quite special. And I feel like Campbell wasn't shocked until after he knocked him down, because after he knocked him down, that's when Garcia really put his foot on the gas, and then he was like, shit.
Do you think he could have done more in that situation? Like, do you think, because obviously I don't think Campbell's really renowned as like a finisher, is he? But do you think I don't even know if he had Garcia hurt, because Garcia seemed to get up and he seemed to be okay. So maybe he felt like, no, it's not the right time. Let me relax a bit. But do you think he maybe could have gone for the kill?
No, he couldn't have, because he wasn't hurt. That wasn't a knockdown, like his dazed kind of knockdown. It was kind of like a flash knockdown. Yeah. Like Garcia wasn't hurt, so Campbell couldn't have done anything. There was no way of him getting a win in that fight with the condition that Garcia was in, and the strength and the speed he had. There was nothing that Campbell could have done that was going to get him that win.
I feel a bit sorry for Campbell, to be honest with you. Because I've watched an interview recently, and it was a bit lose-lose for him, because even after that knockdown, you're right in the sense that he definitely got up and he wasn't dazed. But they scored that round 10-9, which pretty much tells you the fix was in, as far as I'm concerned. He was never winning no points. And if he did get the knockout, it would have been he knocked out an Instagram fighter. So really and truly, it was lose-lose regardless.
Made a lot of money.
yeah, that's the good win, I guess, isn't it?
Where does Lomachenko go next from here? Do you think, because it's unfortunate for him because he's in such a stacked weight class, right? So what does Campbell do from here, Ahar? Do you think what can he do? You know, he's in such the division is insane, you know?
Go up and wait, probably. Because at that weight class,
would you take that?
Oh, 100%. Someone asked me that a few hours ago. 100%. 100%. I'll take any fight.
I think that'd be a good fight.
Yeah, 100%.
What
Ryan Garcia done to him, David Haney would do the same thing to him. Tank would do the same thing to him. Lopez would do the same thing to him. All of those four good guys would do the same thing to him. So he don't want that to happen to him again. So he'll probably go up in weight class.
How do you win the fight?
You've got the power to hurt him as well. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you say, Samson, you asked a question?
Yeah, how do you win that fight? How do you see yourself winning that fight?
What, me?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got the punch power. I've got the strength. You know. All it takes is that one hit.
Before we let Ahara get back to his holiday, does anyone have any like random questions and we can wrap things up? I think Seb, you had one, right? Like a bit of a freestyle question. I can't remember what it was.
I've got one quick one.
Yeah,
well, literally, go then.
Would you work with Eddie Hearn again?
Hell fucking no.
Is there anyone, obviously I don't want you to say anything out of turn or anything like that, but is there anyone in boxing, not just like promoter wise, is there anyone in boxing that you would love to work with in the future?
I just want money.
whoever put the bread on the table, yeah?
Cool. I had a question. If tomorrow, you know, I don't know, somebody or MTK offered you a headliner tomorrow, O2 Arena sold out, who would be the person that you pick to fight? And it's not Obama. It's like, all right, this would be a really good fight.
Taylor.
Yes. All right, I thought about that, you know.
I would love that rematch, man. I'd love to see it.
Would you take that rematch if that was on the table?
Yeah, 100%. But I know that I'm not that I'm ready for it. That fight's not going to be offered to me now. So I need to prove myself before I put my name and his name in the same sentence. It'd be wrong for me to put our name in the same sentence right now because I'm not there yet. So I need to get there before I start putting my name and his name in the same sentence. He's a unified world champion and he's going on to bigger things. I'm just getting back into world level now. So, you know. But my time will come.
Yeah, that would be good. And just like on a personal note, I hated when he screamed in your face, you know. I hated that.
Yeah.
I hated that, man. I
still haven't watched that fight back, you know. I can't bring myself to watch it back.
Yeah. Like, I was on the day of my last fight.
Say that again, sorry.
Oh, you watched it on the day of your last fight?
Oh, did you?
I watched it back.
Oh, yeah. I saw your interview about that, actually. Yeah. What do you think that did for you? Like, do you think that gave you like a... Was it a motivational thing or was it just like a clear the air kind of thing?
Both.
Mm.
Yeah. When everyone said to me that I quit and I was like, nah, my nose thing. When I watched it back, that's when I said to myself, mate, you quit, man.
Mm.
You fucking quit. You quit. And I have to admit it.
So you see, so just about that. So obviously, I've had the stance that I'm not a fighter. I don't get in the ring, so I can't have opinions on these things because I've never been in the ring in my life. I just like boxing and I like watching boxing. But obviously, we had the Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce incident that happened a few weeks ago. Now, what's your stance on like what happened that day? And do you consider that to be a quit? Like, what do you consider to be a quit? Because obviously, you just said yourself. That you quit. So where is the line for you?
Daniel Dubois did quit because he didn't have any answers. He didn't have any answers, Joe Joyce. He couldn't stop Joe Joyce. And when he realised he can't stop Joe Joyce and his eye just keeps on getting hit and he's going to be fucked. He was like, listen, man, I've got no choice. Like, I've got no choice. I've got no answers. Joe Joyce, I can't even hit the guy now. Am I eyes fucked? If I continue this fight, my eye's going to come out of the fucking socket. So he quit as well.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Any other questions, lads?
Yeah, I have one. On a personal, like, you know, Christmas has just gone by, New Year's is like, everyone's overeating. So how do you keep the weight down? Like, what do you, like, what's like your go-to tip to keeping in shape?
Do your runs. I'm always running. I'm always in the gym, keeping fit all year round. I'm just always doing the runs. I'm addicted to the gym. Gym's like my home. I feel at peace when I'm in the gym. So I'm always in there. All that Christmas shit ain't really me. Eating fucking burgers every day and McDonald's and Five Guys. That's not me. I knew
I was gonna mention Five Guys.
I knew. I was just waiting. We should have done an account. How many times we can get to say Five Guys?
Five Guys, bro. He loves Five Guys. Definitely should try and get a sponsorship or something.
Yeah, so what I do after my fights, I go mad for about a week and then I just get straight back in the gym. So I'm always doing running, training. So yeah, keep the weight down. You just gotta keep training, really. That's all you can do.
Do you enjoy the training? Because I feel like that's the hardest part of boxing.
I love it. That's the only time I really.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I'm saying that really, like at training, that's the only time that I really feel at peace. Really, 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 really feel at peace. I don't feel at peace. Like when I'm around clubs and people, I don't like people. I don't like hanging around many people. I'm quite an awkward person, I feel. But when I'm in the gym, I feel like I'm at home.
I hear that.
I love it. I love it. Then it's like being at home.
I hear that, man. Hey, Hara, man, I just want to say, like, thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you on. Like, I hope you've enjoyed the experience. That we certainly have, man. And I just want to say thanks for coming on your holidays. Like, I did ask, like, do you want to do it when you come back to London? But, you know, you were happy to help me out and come on. So, man, I just want to say big up you for that.
No, thank you, man. Anytime, man. Anytime.
Appreciate it, bro, man.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap things up here as well. But yeah, Hara, thanks for coming on. Sebi, Samson, Jide, Leroy, thanks for coming on. Also, make sure you follow us on Ringside Fracas on Twitter, on Instagram. We've got a YouTube as well, so the visuals will be available on there. And yeah, we'll be back next week with another episode. Take it easy, guys.
Yeah, Lennox Lewis. I'm coming for you.
Is it frustrating to train like you did and then have this in 7 or 8 seconds?
For this fight, I only trained probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks for this fight. I had to bury my best friend, and I dedicated this fight. I wasn't going to fight. I dedicated this fight to him. I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and Michigan, most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynch is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nairclaw. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Saying now, Mike.